There's a special kind of regret that comes from realizing the person you friend-zoned has completely moved on while you're still stuck. That's the kind of regret I have right now.
I'm Liam. I'm 28 now, and sometimes I still catch myself thinking about Carol. That's the thing about first love, I guess. It sticks to you, like pine sap on your fingers after climbing trees. No matter how much you wash, there's always that faint, sweet stickiness. Carol moved across the street when we were 9. One day the house was empty. The next there was this girl with wild, curly hair riding a blue skateboard up and down Pine Avenue while I watched from my front steps. "You just gonna sit there?" she called out. That was Carol. Direct. Fearless. By sunset, we'd mapped every crack in the sidewalk between our houses. Our parents became friends almost as quickly as we did. My dad and hers coached Little League together. Our moms exchanged recipes and knowing glances whenever Carol and I would disappear to build snow forts or hunt for salamanders in the creek behind our neighborhood. "Liam and Carol are inseparable," my mom would tell relatives. It wasn't just a saying. It was truth. We had this hideout in the woods. Nothing fancy, just an old fallen oak with a hollow spot big enough for two kids. We bring comic books, candy bars, a flashlight when it got dark. It was our place, our world. I don't remember exactly when things shifted. There wasn't some lightning bolt moment, you know? Just this gradual, almost inevitable drift from best friends to something more. By high school, everyone just assumed. Liam and Carol. Carol and Liam. Junior year winter formal was when it became official, I guess. I saved up for weeks to buy her this corsage with tiny blue flowers that matched her eyes. She wore her grandmother's silver locket. I remember my hands shaking when I put that corsage on her wrist. "You're not going to pass out on me, are you?" she teased, but her voice was soft. We danced all night. When I finally got up the nerve to kiss her, really kiss her, not just a quick peck, it felt like the most natural thing in the world. After that, we were that couple. The one everyone points to when they talk about high school sweethearts. We studied together in the library, hiked the trails at River Point Park on weekends, volunteered at the animal shelter on Saturdays. Everyone said we'd end up married someday. Sometimes I caught our English teacher, Ms. Harmon, watching us with this nostalgic smile, like we reminded her of something precious she'd lost. Senior year, the acceptance letters started coming. Mine came first. Stanford Engineering. Full scholarship. I remember thinking, this is perfect. California weather, top program, what's not to love? Then Carol got hers. NYU. Journalism. Her dream school. 3,000 miles apart. We talked about it like it was just a minor inconvenience. Something we'd overcome because, well, we were us. Liam and Carol. Hadn't we already made it through everything else? "We'll visit," she promised. "Holidays, breaks, and there's video calls." I nodded, believing it because I needed to. That summer before college felt urgent somehow, like we were trying to store up enough memories to last through the drought ahead. We took long drives with no destination. Stayed up all night talking about nothing and everything. Made these elaborate promises about how nothing would change. The first month at Stanford was brutal. I check my phone constantly, calculate time differences in my head, plan my schedule around when Carol might be free. The video calls were not great. Pixelated faces, laggy connections, conversations that felt like we were reading from scripts. "How's your roommate? How's the weather there? How was that test you were studying for?" Surface stuff. Safe stuff. I sent her care packages, Stanford gear, California snacks, handwritten letters like some character from a period drama. I'd schedule alarms to send good morning texts that would arrive when she woke up on the East Coast. When fall break rolled around, I didn't hesitate. I spent nearly all my summer job money on a plane ticket to New York and concert tickets to see this indie band Carol had been obsessing over. I imagined the surprise on her face when I showed up. How she'd throw her arms around me. How everything would snap back into place, like those 3 months apart were just a blip. The concert tickets were in an envelope with her name written on it, tucked into my backpack as I boarded the plane to JFK. I was so certain, so hopeful, so completely clueless about what was coming.
"I'm Carol. I'm 28 now, and sometimes I wonder what would have happened if I'd made different choices. NYU was everything I dreamed of. overwhelming, enormous, unapologetically alive. My first week, I got lost 3 times trying to find the journalism building. I ate pizza at 2 a.m. with strangers who became friends by sunrise. I stood in Washington Square Park and felt the city pulse around me like it had its own heartbeat. It was intoxicating. And then there was Liam, waiting on my laptop screen, every Thursday at 7 p.m., his familiar smile beaming from 3,000 miles away. How do you explain the feeling of reinvention to someone who's known you since you were 9? It's not that I didn't miss him. I did. There were moments, walking past a skateboarder in the park, hearing a song we used to play on repeat, when the missing felt physical, like hunger. But there was this other feeling too. This lightness. This sense of expansion. You're not married, my roommate Zoe pointed out one night while I was debating whether to go out. You're 18. College is when you figure out who you are. That stuck with me. Who was I, really? Carol from Pine Avenue, who everyone knew as half of Liam and Carol? Or someone else entirely? I started saying yes more. To study groups that turned into dinner plans. To impromptu trips to Brooklyn galleries. To conversations with people who knew nothing about me and had no expectations. The video calls with Liam started to feel constraining. Like I was stepping back into an old version of myself each time. I miss you, he'd say, his voice earnest and steady, just like him. I miss you too, I'd reply. And I did. Just not in the all-consuming way I thought I should. Is that terrible to admit? When Liam texted that he was coming to visit during fall break, I felt 2 things simultaneously, excitement and panic. The week before his visit, I couldn't sleep. The day Liam arrived, it was raining. One of those miserable New York downpours that soaks through everything. I met him at his hotel, and when he saw me, his face lit up like I'd personally hung the moon. We hugged, and it was familiar and strange all at once. He smelled the same, felt the same, but something was different. Me, probably. He'd planned everything. Dinner at this cute Italian place, tickets to a concert by that band I'd been obsessing over. Perfect, thoughtful Liam. I tried to match his enthusiasm. I laughed at all the right moments, held his hand across the table, kissed him when it felt like I should. But there was this distance I couldn't cross. The next morning, I suggested we walk through Washington Square Park. It had stopped raining, and the city looked washed clean. We sat on a bench watching street performers, students rushing to class, dogs chasing squirrels. Liam, I began, my heart hammering so hard I was sure he could hear it. I think we need to talk about us. His smile faltered, just slightly. He knew. Of course he knew. I've been doing a lot of thinking, I continued, the words feeling rehearsed even though I'd never said them aloud. About college, and distance, and growing up. I think maybe we should take a step back. There. It was out. What does that mean exactly? He asked quietly. I think we should just be friends, I said, trying to sound gentle. We have so much history, Liam. I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose you. But I also don't want us to miss out on experiences because we're trying to hold on to something from high school. What I didn't say, I wanted the freedom to explore without consequences. I wanted to know Liam would still be there if nothing better came along. I wanted him accessible but not binding. A safety net. Liam was quiet for a long moment. A street musician nearby started playing something melancholy on a saxophone. If that's what you want, he finally said. That's the thing about Liam. Even when I was hurting him, he was trying to understand. It's not about not wanting you in my life, I insisted. It's about needing to figure out who I am outside of us. He nodded, but his eyes had gone distant in a way I'd never seen before.
This is Liam again. 2 years have passed since Washington Square Park. You want to know the worst part about being friend-zoned? It's not the initial pain. It's the limbo after. I returned to Stanford carrying more than just my luggage. Every notification on my phone would make my heart jump. Is it her? Does she miss me? Has she changed her mind? Pathetic, I know. My grades slipped. I skipped meals. My engineering professor pulled me aside after I bombed a midterm. Whatever's going on, Liamander, figure it out. You're too bright to waste this opportunity. That night, I stared at my reflection in the bathroom mirror. Hollow eyes. 3-day stubble. This person I barely recognized. Miguel, my roommate, started dragging me to the dining hall, to study groups, to anything involving human interaction. "You're still breathing, aren't you?" he'd say. "Then act like it." I was going through the motions. Attending classes. Nodding at appropriate times and conversations. All while part of me remained tethered to my phone, waiting for Carol's texts, analyzing her social media posts for hidden meanings. Then came the robotics competition announcement. Our engineering department was fielding a team, needed someone with programming skills. "You should sign up," Miguel suggested, sliding the flyer across our shared desk. I almost said no. What was the point? But something, maybe exhaustion with my own misery, made me show up to the first meeting. That's where I met Maya. Not in some dramatic, love-at-first-sight way. She was just the environmental science major who challenged our team's initial design. "Your power consumption is ridiculous," she said, pointing at our blueprint. "You're building a forest monitoring robot that would destroy more habitat than it would help preserve." Direct criticism of my work. It was refreshing. The robotics project gave me purpose. Suddenly, I had deadlines that mattered, problems that demanded solutions, a team that needed my focus. I started sleeping better, checking my phone less. When Carol texted random memories or inside jokes, I'd respond, but hours later rather than seconds. Sometimes I'd forget to reply altogether. One evening, after the team had been working for 14 straight hours, Maya suggested a hike. "The sun still exists," she reminded us. "Vitamin D is a thing." The trail she chose climbed up to Eagle Ridge, overlooking the bay. Maya pointed out native plants, explained ecosystem interactions I'd never noticed. She didn't fill silences with nervous chatter. She listened, really listened, when I talked. We didn't kiss that day or the next. Our relationship built slowly, intentionally. Weekend climbing trips. Study sessions that turn into dinner. Conversations about actual futures, not shared nostalgia. Maya didn't care about who I was in high school. She was interested in who I was becoming. "You think differently," she told me once, as we mapped out solar panel placements for our robot. "You see patterns other people miss." The robotics competition came and went, but our connection continued. By junior year, we'd settled into something solid. We complemented each other, her environmental vision, my technical skills. We challenged each other, built things together. I hadn't noticed the exact moment when thoughts of Carol stopped dominating my days, when checking her social media no longer felt necessary, when her occasional texts became just that, occasional communications from someone you used to know, not lifelines I desperately clung to. Maya and I moved into an off-campus apartment senior year. She filled it with plants, air purifiers, she called them, and maps of places we talked about visiting. We stayed up late debating renewable energy implementation and designing sustainable housing models. It wasn't the sweeping, all-consuming passion I'd had with Carol. It was something steadier, more balanced. We were partners, not just lovers. There was something beautiful about being fully present in my current life, not half living in memories. The space between who I was and who I'd become, it wasn't empty anymore.
Carol again. 5 years out of college. If you looked at me on paper, you'd think I had it all figured out. Senior digital content strategist at a major media company. Byline in respected publications. Apartment with a view in Brooklyn. Career-wise, I was killing it. Everything else, not so much. Dating after college was like trying on clothes that almost fit but pinch in all the wrong places. Nothing felt right. There was Julian, the finance executive. Designer suits, expensive restaurants, weekend trips to the Hamptons. He'd talk about investment portfolios while checking his watch, treating our relationship like another asset to manage. "Your little articles are cute," he once said, scrolling through his phone while I told him about an interview that had kept me up for days. We lasted 3 months. Then came Noah, the musician. Charismatic, passionate, perpetually broke. He'd write songs about my eyes, then disappear for days when inspiration struck. He'd forget birthdays, but remember exactly how I liked my coffee. "You're my muse, Carol," he'd say, guitar in hand, charm on full display. Until the charm wore thin when rent was due or plans were broken for the fifth time. 6 months, that one. Ethan, the startup founder, came next. Brilliant, driven, absolutely married to his work. Our relationship existed in the margins of a schedule, 7 a.m. coffee before his meetings, late dinners when his investors weren't in town. We're building something revolutionary, he'd explain when canceling plans again. I understood ambition. I respected it. But I also wanted someone who occasionally looked up from their screen long enough to see me. For months. You've got a type, Zoe pointed out over brunch after the Ethan breakup. And it's not working for you. What type is that? I asked, defensive. Men who are absolutely unavailable in one way or another. Just different enough flavors of wrong. I dismissed her theory. But later that night, scrolling through my phone, I paused at Liam's name. I always did. We still texted occasionally. Nothing deep. Just shared memories that popped up. Finding an old playlist. Seeing our high school mascot on a stranger's t-shirt. Found my ancient physics notes. Remember when you used to explain potential energy? I texted after the Ethan split. His reply came hours later. Simple, friendly. The exact level of care I'd asked for years ago. These little exchanges were life rafts after failed relationships. Reminders that someone had once known me completely and loved me anyway. During Christmas at my parents', I spotted Mom watching me check my phone after sending Liam another nostalgic text. Sometimes what we let go finds somewhere better to grow, she said gently, passing me a mug of tea. We're just friends, I replied automatically. Are you? She asked. The question lingered uncomfortably. Then came the Instagram notification. Liam's account, which I still followed despite him rarely posting. A photo of him and a dark-haired woman standing on a beach, her hand resting on his chest, a small diamond catching the light. His caption, she said yes. I stared at it for so long my screen went dark. It shouldn't have been a surprise. We'd been just friends for years now. But somehow I'd always imagined, what? That he'd be there waiting. That his life would stay in a holding pattern while I figured myself out. When the invitation arrived for Michael and Layla's wedding, I knew Liam would be there. We still shared friends from home. I shouldn't have gone. But I did. He looked different. Maya, his fiancée, was lovely, intelligent, unpretentious, clearly crazy about him. I watched them from across the reception, the way they communicated without words, the casual intimacy of his hand on the small of her back. Three glasses of champagne in, I cornered him near the bar. Remember when we used to talk about how boring these wedding traditions were? I said, aiming for casual nostalgia. He smiled politely. Did we? That was a long time ago. Not that long, I pressed. Remember how we used to say we'd elope instead? Something shifted in his expression. Not unkindness, but a gentle setting of boundaries. I should get back to Maya, he said. Panic flared in my chest. This wasn't how the story was supposed to go. Zoe found me hiding in the bathroom. He's really moved on, I said, stating the obvious through tears. What did you expect? She asked, not unkindly. You friend-zoned him. Did you think he'd just wait around? Later, I found Liam alone on the rooftop garden of the venue. One last chance, I thought. We had something special, I started. We did, he agreed easily. For who we were then. We could try again, I suggested. Heart pounding. People find their way back to each other. He looked at me for a long moment. Carol, he said gently, what we had ended that day in Washington Square Park. I'll always care about you. But that door closed years ago. Looking at him, this accomplished, centered man so different from the boy I remembered, I suddenly saw the gap between my memory and reality. While I'd been hoping he would always be there for me, he'd been building something new. I should have realized sooner, I whispered. Maybe, he said. But we all learn things in our own time. As he turned to leave, I finally understood. The hardest lesson wasn't losing him initially. It was realizing that love doesn't always wait in the wings. Sometimes, when you set it free, it actually goes.